From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations and comments featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Everyone cares about money, but relatively few people pay much attention to economics. That might be the lament of the professional economist and scholars who follow the history of economic theory and practice. With that paradox in mind, Soundings now presents a discussion about commerce and culture in America, with attention to the development of the American Economic Association. The association is the subject of study for one scholar who recently completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center. He is A.W. Coates, an economic historian from the University of Nottingham. Also participating in the discussion is Crawford Goodwin, a professor of economics at Duke University, who serves as dean of the graduate school. Bob, let me ask you to comment on this proposition. Is economics a science or an art? Anybody ever figured that out?
There was a major dispute about this at the time when the association was formed in the 1880s.
Still goes on, doesn't it?
There is a major dispute now, and that question is not likely to be settled.
Well, tell me, what are the major sorts of positions that have been taken surrounding that question? Tell me, you know, from a historical standpoint, and then you might want to speak from in contemporary terms.
Well, both from a historical standpoint and in contemporary terms, the question boils down to whether a social science can be like a natural science. And for a long time, economists have had the aspiration to make economics more like physics, based on certain laws, certain propositions, which it is said are positive. That is, they analyze the economy as it is and as it's developing, rather than normative. And normative propositions are propositions about what ought to be. Now, policy obviously concerns what ought to be, whether there ought to be a tariff, whether the price level ought to be controlled, things like that. Now, whether one can be a scientist and be relevant to policy without being partisan is a critical issue. In the late 19th century, the association or the connection between the American Economic Association and the Christian social reform movements meant that economists were appearing as preachers and appearing as partisans.
Tell me about some of the political elements or the ideological dimensions surrounding the origins of the American Economic Association.
Well, perhaps the best example is the question of the monetary standard. The question of whether the United States should be on the gold standard or the silver standard or some mixture of the two, which is known as bimetallism. Now, this is clearly a technical question, and many members of the public would recognize that this is a subject for experts. Whereas, for example, the subject of whether there should be controls over labor unions is not such a technical subject. The presidential election of 1896 is a classic example of technical economic questions figuring very prominently in the election campaign, in which William Jennings Bryan, the populist leader, who also was sponsored by the Democratic Party after he'd won the ticket for the populists, was an advocate of the silver standard. And there are complex reasons for this. The interest of the farming community in the Middle West, the belief that the gold standard was deflationary and was causing depression. Whereas McKinley, the Republican candidate, stood for the status quo, the banking and financial interests, and the established gold standard. In fact, this was one of the most exciting American elections in the 19th century. And William Jennings Bryan made a famous cross of gold speech. Now, that is an example of a technical economic question getting into the forefront of public politics. The economists as individuals were divided, but it was very important to the association's leaders that they should not get involved in presidential politics. That's an example of a hot public question. But generally speaking, we know much too little about the public dimension of economics through the media. I would love someone to do some serious research on this.
One of the things that we want to talk about in our discussion of the American Economic Association and its historical development and its importance today is the question of influence, of impact. Let me ask Crawford Goodwin to comment for a moment.
Let me begin by saying that I think the association has, as an association, perhaps had very little influence. It hasn't attempted, as Bob has described, over its history to take particular positions or to intervene in any sense in the public policy process. The influence of particular economists, however, in my judgment, has been very great. There's a good deal of controversy, however, over whether this is the case. One of the prominent members of the profession, George Stigler, who has been a Nobel Prize winner and a president of the association, has suggested that, in fact, economists are just hired guns, that in the policy process you can find an economist to take almost any position, and people with who are predisposed toward particular positions will find somebody to repeat their position. But returning to your initial question of the influence of economists, I think one of the striking developments of the last 30 years is to see economists rise from rather technical positions as advisors on policy issues to become very senior in government and during several administrations to really dominate the cabinets of presidents like Jimmy Carter and Richard Nixon. Now, whether this reflects their personal influence or their professional is an open question.
Bob?
And, of course, some of the Nobel Prize winners have been pure theorists who are interested in the purely intellectual development of the subject and do not consider themselves either competent on public policy issues or really interested in them.
In other words, there'd be a parallel here between somebody who's interested in theoretical linguistics and applied linguistics.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes, but also I think we should note that there is a theoretical distinction in the discipline between economists who believe there is a large and important role for government and therefore for the economist to advise government, and those who believe that the best role for government is to remain silent.
Okay, now, do you attach political or ideological positions, quote-unquote, to that kind of a stance that you've just described?
Yes. Economists who typically bear the label Keynesian or institutionalist are more likely to be interested in the public policy process and to be involved in it. Those who subscribe to a libertarian or a free market Chicago school approach are more likely to be skeptical about direct participation in government.
Bob?
But the Chicago school type economists are also actively engaged in studying, for example, the process of regulation.
Now, this would be Mr. Friedman, for instance?
George Stigler would be a better example. And they would be analyzing the effects of regulation. Not unusually, they would come out with the conclusion that regulations were inefficient, that they led to a misallocation of resources. But one would have to be a very pure laissez-faire economist to say that this is not a subject to be studied. All we need to do is to dismantle government.
What Bob Coates has been describing here, I want to ask Crawford Goodwin to comment, sounds like there are no answers in this game of economics. It is a process. It's a continuing experiment. That the word definitive just is not going to get into the discussion. Am I right?
Well, I think if you're talking about the application of economics to public policy questions, you probably are right. I think that it's important to return to Bob's early statement that there is a high degree of agreement among economists on how you analyze a problem, and in many cases about the evidence that has been gathered to date. I would add to what he has just said that perhaps the single element that draws economists together today is a focus on markets and the role of markets as an allocator of resources and as a means to accomplish social ends. Economists differ about the effectiveness of markets in accomplishing these goals at all times, but you'll find that most economists are looking at markets in different ways these days and using various statistical and empirical tools to do this.
Let me ask you both to comment. Bob Coates from an historical standpoint and Crawford Goodwin from perhaps a more contemporary one. The big issue that seems to have occupied the mind of the American public in terms of money and economics is the question of the federal deficit. What are the positions that the economists have staked out here? My common sense, for instance, tells me that I shouldn't spend more than I earn, but I'm not a country. Tell me about that, Bob.
The traditional position, I think, before the 1930s, before the Keynesian revolution, was that sound economic policy involved balancing the budget. And the analogy between the individual household and the country was often quoted. There were economists who recognized that this was not always possible, that in a depression in the early 1930s, for example, even some of the more conservative economists recognized that positive government intervention, increased spending to stimulate economic activity, was necessary and desirable.
In other words, maybe a short-term deficit for a long-term gain.
That was exactly the case. That is, that this was a temporary measure. But in general, the object of the exercise should be to balance the budget. Then there was the view, which is still held by some people, that federal debt is a debt between different groups of Americans. It's not the same phenomenon as a foreign debt. And that if, in order to promote economic growth, it's necessary for the government to maintain a continuing interventionist expenditure policy, then that the gains from this, in terms of economic growth and employment, could well outweigh the costs, so that a moderately increasing federal debt was not necessarily something to worry about. And that above all, attempts which have been made in recent years to establish constitutional rules, either at the state level or the federal level, to prevent a deficit, would create rigidities which would have all sorts of undesirable economic and social consequences.
It sounds as though you're describing, Bob, a situation in which to have a balanced budget rather denies the future economically, or makes some negative assumptions about the future economically. Let me, Crawford, tell me about what's going on now.
I think the difference between the economist's view of the deficit and the increase in the federal debt that results and the general public's is that whereas the general public feels there's a strong moral issue here, that it's just like spending beyond your means and therefore improper, the economist is concerned with the ultimate real effects on the economy. And the principal effect that they worry about now is the increase in the interest rate that is a consequence of the size of the federal debt. And there is a sense that this increase in the interest rate will sooner or later bring about a new recession, that the recent recovery will be insupportable because of rising interest rates and the effect on housing markets and other areas of debt financing.
But there is a deeper ideological background to this, which really centers on the relative importance of the public sector and the private sector. If one takes a left-wing, not necessarily Marxist, but radical view, which some liberal people could take, there is a tendency for the capitalist system to run down if it is left to itself. Of course, Milton Friedman would not agree with this. But those people would say, in order to save capitalism, it may be necessary for the government to take an increasing share of economic activity, so that without the government deficit, that there would be a very serious depression and unemployment and a waste of resources. That was very much the position that Keynesians took in the 1930s, that the great defect of the depression was a low level of economic activity, high unemployment with very serious social consequences in an economy which had tremendous productive capacity which was not being utilized. And one didn't have to be either left-wing or right-wing to think that this was an evil state of affairs which should be corrected. The interventionists would argue that this could only be corrected by increased government activity. Now, the scale of government is so much greater that one can be quite left-wing and still feel that government is too big.
Mm-hmm.
So the proportions are very different now, and the ideological implications.
From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings. You're listening to a discussion about commerce and culture in the United States, with attention to the history of the American Economic Association. The panelists are A.W. Coates and Crawford Goodwin. A.W. Coates is a professor at the University of Nottingham. He recently completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center, where he worked on a history of the American Economic Association. Crawford Goodwin is a professor of economics at Duke University, where he also serves as dean of the graduate school. Here is Crawford Goodwin.
I'd like to ask Bob a question that I find very intriguing and don't have the answer to myself, and that is whether or not the economics profession should have a code of ethics, and perhaps whether the American Economic Association should have been concerned about this. As we all know, the physicians and the lawyers have such codes, and they worry in their professional associations about the proper personal role of the professional in his daily life. Several years ago at the American Economic Association, Eileen Shanahan, a prominent economic journalist, lacerated the profession for its failure to have such a code. She argued, for example, that in major public controversies such as the recent one over regulation, that so many of the prominent economists had been corrupted by the parties involved through various forms of consulting and other fees, that it was impossible for the public to get a genuinely unbiased view on these questions. What do you think, Bob? Should the profession concern itself with such issues as this?
First, let me avoid this question by resorting to history. In the earlier stages of the history of the American Economic Association, when most economists were scholars, the questions of correct behavior were questions of scholarly etiquette and the avoidance of partisanship. It was the same kind of issue as that for any other scholar, not to abuse his scholarly position by injecting emotion, political partisanship, distorting the evidence, and matters of that kind. Since the 1930s, with the increasing prominence of economists in non-academic jobs, the question of professional ethics has come up from time to time. But here again, the association has, in accordance with its traditions, always avoided trying to prescribe standards and trying to categorize people. There is no procedure for excommunicating people from the economics profession. Now, the question whether the association ought to do something about this is something that it has avoided. There was one example of an accusation of plagiarism against a leading member of the profession, but that was investigated very reluctantly by the association. But as far as public behavior, the association has avoided the issue. The example that Crawford gave is particularly relevant for academic economists, perhaps Nobel Prize winners, who use their position to do consulting. And the question here, it seems to me, is not a matter for the association, but for the individual. In general, I take the view that the association would get itself into terrible trouble if it tried to define professional standards and tried to exclude people who did not come up to those standards.
Let me ask you both, Crawford Goodwin, Bob Coates, to comment on economics from a really very subjective standpoint. You've been talking about economics and theories and applied doctrines of economics. Do professional economists think about human nature? Do they think about people who are lazy or people who are industrious? How do they figure out questions about economics that have this very vague meeting ground between human nature and money and numbers and mathematics and dollars, all of that? Crawford?
Well, you've asked us a very difficult question. I think that the way we will probably respond, and the way many economists will respond, is to say that economists take many of these things as given. Uh-huh. And prefer not to question them. For example, if a person is lazy, we say that's his free choice and his right to be lazy. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't say that he should work any harder than he wants to. We simply look at the environment in which the lazy person operates.
You look at the results.
Yes, that's right. And we consider free choice a value in itself and attempt to maximize that whenever is possible.
Mm-hmm. Bob?
Yes, certainly religious and spiritual pronouncements. This would be soft, non-scientific stuff, the kind that economists do not want to be associated with.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are serious questions here about the boundaries of economics and its relationship to psychology and sociology. Historically, economists have tried to keep away from these difficult questions because they did not seem to be, rightly or wrongly, amenable to the kinds of methods and techniques which economists were specializing in.
But they're getting into these areas now.
My belief, this may be a delusion, is that economists are now becoming much more interested in psychology than has been the case for several decades. There's a return to issues about the role of psychological factors and sociological factors in the composition of consumer demand, for example. Whether this is going to change the subject or not is another matter, but the interdisciplinary connections between economics and these related fields, for example, industrial sociology and mm-hmm. psychology, seems to me a subject for prominent and promising development.
Call this economical holism? Is that what it would be?
Economists talk a good deal about the distinction between what they call positive economics and normative economics. And positive economics is supposed to be value-free mm-hmm. and not to have any values concealed within it. And I think that probably both Bob and I would agree that much of economics that is thought by some of our colleagues to be entirely positive has norms embedded in it. The whole notion of the market has a certain political and social set of values that are accepted by the practitioners of market economics. The notion of independent consumer demand has a certain psychological assumption that has a normative element. So economists look for simplicity where often there's a great deal of complexity.
Mm-hmm. Bob?
I think this is directly connected with other issues that we've touched on. This is whether the economist, as an advisor to business or government, can be a mere or pure technician, an engineer, a technocrat, or whether other softer psychological, sociological, and ideological considerations come in. This links back to the question of professional ethics, where I would say the most important area for this has not been the American Economic Association, but the Council of Economic Advisers. The Council of Economic Advisers is a very peculiarly or distinctively American body because it's composed of people with high reputations in the economics profession who are usually respected as scholars and as technicians.
And they're sticking their necks out, aren't they?
They are not only sticking their necks out, because economists do this in many contexts, but they are located right at the center of the executive arm of the president. And they have to maintain their professional integrity and their professional standing while at the same time performing a constructive function.
So it's not a question. President. It's not a question, Bob, of whether they're going to take blame. It's a question of to what degree and under what circumstances. Is it Crawford?
Perhaps I could ask Bob to comment on another idea that has been floating around in the profession for several years, and that is a more independent body of economists who might be analogous to a Supreme Court, who would be not responsive to a president or to a Congress, but would be somehow isolated from society and would deliver judgments on public policy questions.
I thought we already had that, and his name is Volcker.
No, I don't think that's the case
at
all. Perhaps those who like to think of the Federal Reserve Board as detached from politics would take that view. I think this is the question that Crawford has raised is very interesting from a cross-cultural point of view. I don't think in this country that academics have the kind of prestige and carry the weight which would lead the public to take a Supreme Court of Economists seriously. Curiously enough, there is a body in Germany with an almost unpronounceable name, the Sachverständigenrat, which is precisely of this kind, which stands outside the political process. There are economists in the council in Denmark who can make statements about economic problems which are free from political association, but not
Bob,
in America.
But Bob, this sounds like the sort of world court proposition. You have an august body that means nothing, that really can't do anything, that people don't take seriously in any sense regarding action. It's only advisory.
Well, the notion here is that at the moment, let us take the case of the deficit. The public hears a variety of voices coming from the economics profession saying that the deficit is serious or it isn't serious. They clearly can't trust as impartial the Council of Economic Advisers because that's appointed and reports to the President of the United States. This so-called Supreme Court presumably would be credible in that it would be unbiased and detached from any political responsibility.
But Wayne, your comment, I think, was a typically American reaction, that A, there is no effective body of economics which is so definitive that it could be accepted as sound and reliable. And secondly, that no body which attempted to take on this position would have any influence because people would not believe it. The subject does not lend itself to conclusive, definitive, unquestionable statements about public policy issues.
Much less easy answers.
Exactly. The second thing is that if such a body were set up, it would not have credibility.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a discussion about commerce and culture in America. The panelists were A.W. Coates of the University of Nottingham and Crawford Goodwin of Duke University. A.W. Coates recently completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center, where he worked on a history of the American Economic Association. Next week on Soundings, a discussion about language and linguistics with scholars from the University of the District of Columbia, Duke University, and the University of Virginia. Soundings would like to hear from you. Send your comments to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Soundings is made possible by grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Listen to Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center inviting you to join me this week for a discussion about commerce and culture in the United States. Everyone cares about money, but relatively few people pay regular attention to economics. Listen for some insights from A.W. Coates, an economic historian from the University of Nottingham, and Crawford Goodwin, a professor of economics and dean of the graduate school at Duke University. A.W. Coates is the author of a forthcoming history of the American Economic Association. Commerce and Culture in America, this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.